This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your quintuple entendre of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramanca, critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
The time, it's come. First of all, this would be a great time to subscribe at youtube.com/podcast. And the reason I say that is we are entering fraught waters. Mm-hmm. And if you want to support us as we enter fraught waters.
Or just see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. See if we survive. Yeah. YouTube.com/podcast. We are here every week rolling out the freshest of content. Joe, the new Taylor Swift album has come out. We really still don't trust you.
Yeah, right.
Oh, is that not what it's called? Sorry.
It sort of is.
The Tortured Poets Department. First of all, you are wearing a color today.
Yeah, you're going right. You're going right
I'm
in.
I'm going
you're
right
not
in.
Leave. It's not an Easter egg.
It's not an Easter egg. We're going right in. I also have, I believe, a no-age t-shirt, sort of roughly in this motif.
Okay.
You know, it's from my authentic punk days.
Yeah.
Like the starting line. Sure. You know, like cool bands, like the starting line. Yes.
I wonder who's seen the starting line more, me or you. I bet it's me.
It's definitely you. Yeah. Okay, so the Taylor album is out.
You don't want to talk about the t-shirt?
I mean,
culture is not a costume. Destin, Florida.
Can't just drive there.
Florida name dropped
a lot.
At least twice. On the album.
There's a song title.
There's the song Florida, and then there's the Post Malone outro of Fortnite.
Yes. I believe it also comes up later.
Somewhere in the anthology,
yeah.
Which we'll get to. Interesting choices. Florida as metaphor on this album didn't really land for me. When you see a song title and it's Florida with multiple exclamation points and you're from Florida, you really need that to hit, but it's definitely third after Florida Kilos by Lana Del Rey and Florida Water by Young Thug and Bloody J. So this one, not touching.
You mean from the best album of 20, whatever year that was?
Sure.
16?
Yeah.
17?
Earlier.
15?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Earlier. April, 14, maybe?
Sure. Yeah. We've been on that.
Anyway, the Florida of this album didn't connect.
Okay. I don't do this a lot, but I was sort of poking around in the genius annotations of the lyrics and other lyric reads.
Well, that's what this album is for.
No, of course, but I don't do it a lot.
Yeah.
And often when I'm poking around the annotations, I'm mostly it's like these people don't totally understand,
poetry,
anything. First of all, don't mistake music for poetry.
Yeah.
Podcasting is poetry. I think that's clear. But I was running my fingers through these annotations, and there are just some stretches, mm-hmm. some big reaches. Right. And it makes me think that if you are forced to see the world to see the world as if everything is an Easter egg, mm-hmm. Sometimes things are just Florida. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing that happened in Florida.
Right.
It's not a big picture thing.
Sure.
That's how I feel about a lot of this album.
Right.
Which regrettably is pretty much a dud.
Straight out. Dud of an album. And when we're talking about the album, are we talking about
the album now, or
are we talking about the anthology?
I think in the interest of humanity and
sure.
decency, I'm going to talk for now just about the album, which is not called We Still Don't Trust You. It's called The Tortured Poets Department. No apostrophe.
Which makes sense to me now. I really, in context
of
the title track, nobody wouldn't even be a plural apostrophe because mm-hmm. I feel like she's saying the way she uses the line,
you left
your typewriter in my apartment, straight from the Tortured Poets Department.
Yes.
As if kitchen supplies straight from the kitchen supplies aisle.
Yes.
Like that makes sense without an apostrophe. So I was team apostrophe before I heard the context in which it's used on the album. And now I think it's grammatically sound.
Well, at least there's that. I'm so glad that we've cleared the copy desk.
What we're dancing around here is that this album is very long, especially if you count what she called the second disc of the album. She called it a surprise double album. She didn't say these are bonus tracks. She didn't say this is deluxe. Like, that's the joke of the name of our show. If you're looking for Easter eggs, we're in the era of the deluxe edition.
Yeah.
This is called The Anthology. It's 31 songs. I want to just do a little bit of math here because I think, you know, we've started to hear the phrase imperial phase thrown around a lot with Taylor Swift.
Yes.
This peak of her career, this time of plenty. And now it's sort of taken this turn into where, you know, Lindsay Zolads, who reviewed the album for The Times, used it. Louis from Pop Pantheon, a close follower, pop critic, he used it. You know, it's in the air, imperial phase. To me, this is her Migos phase. Like, we've gone full Migos. I did the math. Might not be 1,000% accurate. Fact check me on this. I believe that since the summer of 2020, counting the re-records and all the vault tracks and all the anthologies, the bonuses, she's released nearly 200 songs. I think 187 songs since COVID, since the summer of 2020. That's across 8 albums, 4 new, 4 re-record. This is a double album, 31 tracks. 31 tracks. This is like, it's not Certified Lover Boy. This is Culture 2 and Culture 3.
Yes.
Like, this is NBA Youngboy level pop music, flooding the zone, data dump. And the time frame that we're working with, like, sure, she got out of a 6-year relationship, but the timeline of this album is basically
like fall 2023.
Yeah, to earlier,
like,
right?
Like summer 23 to 3 months ago.
Sure. Or generously.
Yeah.
If her breakup is happening slightly before she gets together with, let's just say the names.
Right.
They're all over this album. Matty Healy of the 1975. I mean, this is your legacy.
This is honestly this album. I was texting actually with Lindsay, who wrote The Times. I was texting with her yesterday, and I was like, "The next 1975 album should be purely. It should be all about this,
right?
But only Lovelorn. Only I loved you so. Only
I didn't mean to hurt you.
Yeah, like I failed you, and in so doing, I failed myself.
Right.
It should be a total like straight romantic, straight face, romantic heel. Like I effed up. I screwed up, and that would be the biggest 1975 album in history. And Lindsay texted me, and she said what he really should have done is at around 4 a.m. after the album dropped, just texted her, "You up?"
Both of these things, I think he may have done or will or do.
Is in the process. Yeah. That's really, we should do a separate episode, like the 100 moves. What are the 100 things Matty Healy should do right
Number
now?
Number one, come on Popcast Deluxe.
I mean, that's a given. Yeah. Why is it that every time we're like, hey, so-and-so, we just have like a random conversation. We'll be like, so-and-so should come on Popcast Deluxe. Then like 3 weeks later, their entire life implodes.
Yeah, right. That's the deluxe.
We're like
curse.
The NBA 2K cover or whatever, the NFL.
The Madden curse.
The Madden curse. We're like the Madden. I don't even have the sport right.
Yeah. Close enough. I mean,
close enough. Close enough. The Madden curse.
All right. I mean, let's just talk about the title track. Let's just talk about some of these Matty Healy lyrics. I want to jump right in. Something that people.
Wait, no. First of all, you're leaving me hanging here so crazy calling this album a dud.
That's where we're starting.
Okay,
you're calling this album a dud. I'm more trying to work through my feelings in real time.
Okay, I'm not, because I already worked through my feelings. Okay, but a couple things I do. So before you do whatever dignified side entrance, side door thing you're about to do, like,
you want to ask me a hard question?
No, I just want to talk about the state of play.
Yeah,
I would venture to say that this is the worst reviewed Taylor Swift album in a long time.
At least since Lover.
Definitely, but yes, but I would venture to say it's the reviews of this are worse than Lover.
Hmm, interesting. And Reputation.
Also, Taylor did the thing where she retweeted like positive reviews.
Not even retweeted, made her own tweets.
Quote tweets. Yeah, she quote tweeted them.
Okay.
Yeah, she quote tweeted
with actual tweets. With lyrics. With
context.
Yes.
Yeah. Shout out to all my fellow newspaper pop music critics. I know what it's like. I also personally, I know what it's like to be on like the recipient of some of this kind of like refracted mm-hmm. spotlight, mm-hmm. which is like very lovely. Mm-hmm. But you have to be a little skeptical of it. And I know what it's like to be left out of the spotlight.
Oh, you're talking about the pluses and the minuses of being seen by the artist you're reviewing.
Yes. Yeah. And so for all of those people who work for those newspapers or publications and are like, ah, what a dream to be retweeted and quote-tweeted by Taylor Swift on the official account. Come to death row. So there's that. And it's... It is an album that for maybe the first time I have seen people who I know or strongly believe to be like grown up Taylor stans mm-hmm. saying could have been shorter, like seeing the cracks in the facade. And that's something that I don't think I was prepared to see. Forget whether the album is good or bad. I just wasn't prepared for it to exist in a way that forced some loyalists to reckon with their loyalty.
Oh, see, I feel the total opposite, which is I feel like no matter how good this album was, people were going to take her down a peg. I think she's been
because
so,
of just the last
she's been
months.
So big.
Sure.
She's been so omnipresent. You could feel the fatigue setting in. You could feel it when she announced it at the yes. Grammys. Everyone sort
people
of
just like,
including
oh,
people in the audience,
yes.
people in the audience in the room and people in the audience at home at their computers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were like, oh my God, like take a break. You know, mm-hmm. like you run the world. Like you're the biggest. Like you did it.
And as a total sidebar, if this album beats Cowboy Carter for album of the year
oh, wow.
at next year's Grammy, like
I did take note of
like actual protests.
Grammys
don't mean anything.
How
but
about
actual
neither? What if it's neither? What if somehow
it's Billy
in the universe? It's neither. But I did take note on how many musicians played on this album. A lot. The credits are thick. So that always goes far in the Grammys.
Yep.
As they are with Cowboy Carter.
Yes.
If this is the arms race, I just don't want any part of it. Like, these albums are exhausting in a similar way. They are different, but they are exhausting in a similar way.
Okay. I don't agree with that, but I agree that they're exhausting, but not in the same way. But anyway, go on.
Not as dialogue as discourse, not as a listening.
But
experience.
Even the nature of the exhausting discourse is different.
I agree. The way that I'm thinking about this album, and the reason I haven't totally, I mean, I didn't like Midnights. I don't like Midnights at all.
You like, okay. Is this Taylor Swift's worst album?
That's where, like, it's between the last two for me. As somebody who likes almost every Taylor Swift album.
This is the thing. It's important for all the people who are watching us who don't ordinarily watch us. You'd be hard-pressed to find two grown-ass men who have spent more time either A, enjoying the music of Taylor Swift, writing about the music of Taylor Swift
discussing,
in an enthusiastic
and discussing it even
discussing it
just between the two of
yeah,
us.
Yeah, just like on private time, like on just like on a random Wednesday.
I would venture to say the basis of our friendship is not in small part over
early
understanding and relating
yes.
to conversation about Taylor Swift.
If I'm
as
not mistaken,
people who were not usually part
I feel
of
like
that conversation.
You might have
at the
posted
time.
My Taylor Swift profile on your old Tumblr, maybe?
I did like the memes that came out of the line for this album, the Asylum That
the
Raised
Asylum
Me.
The Asylum Raised Me, yeah.
And there's one really good
the
one.
Tumblr
the Tumblr
screen.
Login page.
It's really good. Really, really good. So good.
That spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, we take this seriously. Mm-hmm. We've been at this for a long time.
We've earned the right to have independent thought.
Yeah,
about
and
this.
And we disagree. Like,
yes,
for instance, like I think
you think I deserved to be doxxed over my Folklore review.
I did make that point to you. I said, you know, the people who wrote
that was amazing.
The people who wrote great skeptical reviews of this Taylor album on this cycle: Tom Bryan at Sarogum, mm-hmm. now Olivia Horn at Pitchfork. Mm-hmm. Some really good stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And you were like, oh, it seems like they're mostly getting out unscathed, unlike I did when I negatively reviewed Folklore. And I was like, the difference is they're right and you were wrong. So we even disagree. Mm-hmm.
Joe's porch doxing. Joe's porch doxing.
If you think folklore is bad. No, but I do.
Don't dox Joe. That's all I'll say.
I want you to spend some time this week.
Going back to folklore.
Going back
which,
to folklore.
Which literally probably is like Illmatic compared to this album.
In terms of tightness.
I'm sure it was. I'm certain. And it's not that I've softened towards folklore, but it's like all of those moves, I think potentially the best versions of those moves are on that record. I happen to not like a lot of these moves, but I do think you're probably right in that the best or platonic ideal version of those moves are on that album, probably not on this album.
And I do feel like from Lover pre-pandemic through Torture Poet Society, Dead Poets Society reference in the music video.
Oh, Captain, my captain.
for Night with Postman.
R.I.P. Robin Williams.
Yeah, okay. Torture Poets Department. I think we're seeing a lot of the same moves, a lot of the same version. I felt it on Midnights. Mm-hmm. You'd heard better versions of those songs
of course.
Previously.
Yes.
The Jack Antonoff, Aaron Dessner period of Taylor Swift. They basically have this full album, mostly, you know, 80%. Jack Antonoff on the first side with a couple Dessner tracks, and then the flip side of that on the second disc.
What did it say to you that I think the Dessner tracks are the better tracks?
Tells me that you're going to grow to love folklore.
Unbelievable. This is,
and I think okay. So the
just
way
just go. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. Go where you need to go.
The way that I've been thinking about this album is. Data dump is a good term for
it's
it.
A data
Imperial
dump.
Phase is a good term for it. Mm-hmm. It's basically
it's Ray Schremer's triple album.
It's basically a season of the Kardashians. And I say that knowing full well that it's loaded in terms of the comparison point, but it is an update with very little things left, very few things left out in the hectic life of one of the most famous people in the world. Who ultimately has been working for the last year, 2 years, now 4 years, but also having these extremely dramatic, very public experiences. And this is her processing it in almost real time with very little, like, okay. Editing.
Okay,
editing is all I can get to. Both on a line level, I think there are lines that go on too long. On the song level, I think there are songs that go on too long or that have too many ideas in them. And then on an album level where we have 31 tracks or whatever it is, 18 on the first one, when we could have had 11 or 12. And I do think, as with most of the Taylor Swift albums that I don't like, maybe Midnight's excluded, like for instance, Lover, which I think is a spotty album.
Yes.
I have, you know, talked about it on podcast.
There's a great
10-song album.
And actually, I feel that. Did you do your shrunk version? I forgot to do
it. I'm still working through it, but I'm making an edit. I will post my Tortured Poets Department edit.
Including Anthology?
Including Anthology, but I don't think there's that much for Anthology
like
that
one
I
thing
need.
Or two things.
So I do think that this is like, it's fan service. It's update. It's here, you know, you saw my breakup, you saw my rebound, and you saw my next breakup, and then you saw my next rebound.
Yeah, but okay, I just...
And this is, like, everything is touched on, and that's where the geniusification comes in.
Yes.
And I do think we are overloaded with specifics, which is, ironically, something that I missed when I felt like Taylor dipped pre-pandemic. Yeah. We'll get back to that.
Okay, I want to talk about two things.
Yeah.
I want to talk first about production.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, let me say what I want to talk second about and then go back. I want to talk about production, but then I also want to talk about the moments on this album where I feel that Taylor really lights up.
Mm-hmm. And there's a
handful. There are. They're just not where you might expect them to be. People have been saying for years at this point that the Antonoff era needs to come to an end. The Dessner era was sort of like a Amuse Bouche, like the Folklore Evermore. It was like, maybe it's an Amuse Bouche. Maybe it'll go in a different direction. There is that. Who's the person on IG or TikTok who's like, here's the first thwack of a song and is like, Antonov.
Who picks it picks Antonov songs as they go. Yeah.
Like, we've all become that person.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think the two stylistic challenges I really had with this album were the absolute narrow palette of production choices, returning to the same wells over and over and over again, the same filtered, like, thwap, thwap, and the same, like, guitars or pianos, like, kind of, like, buried underneath, like, some kind of, like, I don't know how these things work, but, like, some kind of effect to, like, dub them out a little bit. And it's, like, there's a lot of people, I feel like there's a lot of people who are, like, oh, Jack's not giving her better stuff. But actually, my take on it is different. My take is he's not being asked for different stuff. He is a versatile producer who can do a bunch of things. This is the thing that's being asked of him. Like, if he was giving things and Taylor was like, I don't like this, Taylor is a grown-up. She would say, I don't like this.
And I think all the women specifically that he works with have been very clear about that. When I talked to Lord about it and said, you know, oh, people are mad at Jack for whatever, she's like, I'm the boss. Like, I write the songs.
Mm-hmm.
He gives me what I need. Mm-hmm. And I tell him if I like it or I don't.
Yeah.
We know Taylor is the same way. And I think an interesting counterpoint for all of this is if you look at this period of Jack and Lana Del Rey. Lana. Like, mm-hmm. he's doing very different things for Lana than he's doing here. Maybe you like them, maybe you don't. But when people are like, oh, Jack's work on A&W, like, Lana must have forced him to do that. It's like, these are collaborations.
Right, with a person who can do a bunch of different styles. Yes. And, like, clearly can move in different spaces and is people are comfortable with asking him to try different
things. Or they
things.
Wouldn't return to the studio with him over and over
again. So it's actually, like, to me, the sort of flaw here is if it's Taylor asking for the same stuff, like, I think fundamentally, like, great pop stars build their own grammar and then return again and again to their grammar. Like, Drake is an absolute master of this, of finding a way within a 2024 track to remind you of something from 2018 or 2012. Like, it's an incredibly smart approach to building your own lore.
Sure.
There's a difference between that and redundancy. And I think we're hitting the redundancy era. I think we're hitting the...
Sonically,
yes. Then there's no marginal benefit. There's not a song produced, a production on this record, this new one, that's a better version of a pre-existing idea. Many of them are lesser versions of pre-existing ideas. And that's really frustrating. Like, of all the Taylor, if we're thinking songwriting, melodies, production, genre experiment, like, Taylor is not like a pure innovator in that way, but there is something retrograde about the sound of this record. And that to me is a real challenge. That's production. Songwriting, extremely hit and miss. Some really, really rough parts, but also, like, I find an occasional just utterly beautiful section in sandwiched in between some real, like, head scratch sections.
Yeah. I do think that, to me, the sameness of the production definitely makes the thing a slog, especially at 31 tracks. But even on the album proper, the just knowing that we've heard these sounds before, and I felt it on Midnights as well, although this I feel like is a different version of it than Midnights. To me, it's a lack of vocal hooks and it's overwriting in the lyrics. There was a period where I felt like Taylor had sacrificed her specificity in search of huge hooks.
Yes.
Basically from 1989 to Lover.
Yes.
And I missed the specifics of Taylor. Now I feel
she's
sung so far in the other direction that there's so many specifics and so many lines that go on half a bar, a full bar, mm-hmm. another line, another metaphor too long that you sacrifice any vocal hook. And I do think there's moments here where she's writing really tightly and it's landing, but I wonder if she's almost bored of it. Like, I was thinking, honestly, I was thinking a lot about
bored of songwriting,
of perfectly tight songwriting. Right. I think like something Lana's really good at is like a run-on line. I've talked before about Taylor's run-on flow,
yes,
and the way that I think she especially is able to do it when she's writing to track, as opposed to like something that's written on a guitar or a piano. Mm-hmm. But I found myself thinking of like Andre 3000, where he's so good at rapping that he started doing the run on bar thing, like, yeah, just to challenge himself. Yeah. You know,
you
like,
think that's what this is?
I think there's a part of that because, you know, I think of something like Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? Like, that's like could be a classic Taylor song.
If you wanted me dead, you should have just said, nothing makes me feel more alive. So I leap from the gallows and I levitate down your street. Crash the party like a record scratch as I scream. Who's afraid of little old me?
And yet there's just too much there. It could have been pulled back.
Wait, can I tell you what my note on that yeah, song specifically is? The thing that I typed when I was listening to that song for like the third or fourth time is, like a song from the Baz Luhrmann musical about the making of this album.
Which to me sounds like you're describing the parts of Reputation that you like. Like this song could be...
But Reputation has sass and attitude and actual petulance and also like rhythm and a kind of like a flirtation with texture that Taylor historically does not do.
Right.
And I think basically pulls it off. Also, a lot of Antonoff productions on there.
Right.
Antonoff doing a totally different thing and doing a good job of it.
The pre-chorus of the song to me is where it falls apart. And when you hear the pre-chorus versus the chorus, that's just like there's nothing to grasp onto in the way she's delivering the lines. The melodic flow, there's just not enough hooks on this album. Like also, at least Midnight's had Antihero.
Don't you also think on a very basic level, the singing itself, forget the hooks and the melodies, the singing
to me is fine.
No, it's listless. It's absolutely listless. This is why I know it's listless. Okay, so people who've been following our lore for a long time know my positions on Folklore and Evermore and on Dessner in general. And Dessner, what Dessner does, some people would say for Taylor, I would say to Taylor, which I don't like. The one song on this album where I was like, oh, she's singing. Like you really hear the heartbreak. You really hear the brittleness. It's a Dessner production. It's LOML.
Low down boy, you stand up guy, you Holy Ghost. You told me I'm the love of your life. You said I'm the love of your life.
Oh, I'm on the other. I thought you were going to what I think is the best song here, which is also a Dessner song.
Which
but
one?
Keep finishing.
Daddy, I love him.
Finish with Love of My Life.
And so to me, I don't really love the intro necessarily of that song, but it is the one production on this album where there's not so much, it's like gas expands to fill a space. That's how I feel about a lot of Antonoff and Dessner production on Taylor albums. It's the one song on this album, not counting the anthology, where there's not too much happening. It doesn't eat up all the volume in my earphones. And you hear her deploying parts of her voice that I'm like, oh, this is from Fearless. Like, oh, this is from Red. Like you're hearing some parts of her voice that I haven't heard in a really long time. And it was such a shock after like 10 straight songs, like coming like an express train into my head. It was such a relief to hear that. I agree, but I agree generally speaking about the Dessner songs on this album.
At least on the main album.
We're not talking, the anthology, it's like pretend it doesn't exist, at least for now. What Dessner song really jumped out to you?
But Daddy, I Love Him.
With my dress unbuttoned, screaming, But Daddy, I Love Him.
me, that is the peak of this album, both in terms of her wrestling with her public persona. It's
which
the
is
song,
the best stuff on the record.
It's the song where she seems to take on her fans directly, who said, you shouldn't be dating this guy who made racist jokes on a obscure podcast. Like,
not that obscure.
No, quite popular, but
niche,
especially at that time.
Yes.
Like the fact that we have a Taylor Swift album, whole period of the most, maybe the most famous pop star of all time, a whole period of her life. And the fact that she ended up dating a Super Bowl winner comes back to this racist Ice Spice joke that mm-hmm. Matty Ealy has since apologized for. Insane. But this song is taking that head on from the place of Forbidden Love, which is the ultimate
Taylor's germ
of Taylor's stardom.
The lyric on this song, I'll tell you something about my good name. It's mine alone to discredit. Look what you made her do. Like, literally, look what you made her do. It's unbelievable. Like, I screamed when I heard these lyrics because I was like, what's that?
Yeah, like, this chorus is like a Pantheon Taylor chorus, and there's not enough of them on this album. And it feels like she's reaching back to Fearless. Like, there's something else going on here. I do think the modern mode can work well. I think So Long London is economical writing. How much sad did you think I had? Like, that's a Taylor Swift lyric to me.
Stop trying to drill the safe.
Like,
really good.
There's enough really little good images, and she's doing it economically. And I miss the tightness. I miss the country, you know, the boiling down. She always feels now like she can go one step further. There's the line, you know, on the title track about took the ring off my finger, off my middle finger. And you're like, yeah, I know where this is going. I don't need the next three lines. Like, oh, that the other finger is the one that means marriage. It's like, yeah, I got that. Like, from the absence, I could get there mm-hmm. from the absence of it. And I feel like there's not a lot of absence here.
That's also a song that shouts out our boy.
I want to talk about the quote unquote bad lyrics. I want to talk about that verse specifically.
Go for it. Just go for it.
All right. Title track.
Yeah.
Second song on the album. Uh-huh. I think this album starts strong. Fortnite into Torture Poets Department, I think, is a good run. I think Down Bad is pretty good. It's like a nice little. It's delicate again, but it's like a nice
They're just like lesser versions of songs that I didn't love on the last three albums, four albums.
One thing I think she's doing on the title track here and in the video for Fortnite, not to go super Easter egg QAnon, but like, she's borrowing from the 1975. Aesthetically, visually, lyrically, the conversational.
A great band.
You agree. You didn't always agree.
No, but like, I think the thing that I struggled with the 1975, which we should probably just do a whole separate episode on 1975. The thing that
the band of the modern era.
Yeah.
It's the only band that matters.
It is. Found it to be a band that, because it shifts, it's just a shape-shifty band. I never could quite figure out what it was standing for.
Yeah.
And then I think I realized what it was standing for was something that was not musical, per se. It was standing for something ideological. It was standing for something attitudinal.
Yeah.
And then once I could kind of like refract that back into the songs, I felt very differently about it. But I think it took like two or three albums before I was like, oh, I totally get the music, which then led me to think about the ideology, which then led me to think back about the prior music. So I was a little bit late on that arc.
And it is a full arc. It is a band that rewards engagement with its catalog, and it is very self-referential. And Matty Healy is a master of a cringe lyric, a lyric that when you pull it out, put it on Genius and screenshot it and post it on Twitter, 90% of people,
a lot of y'all think that's criticism.
Yeah,
also,
are going to be like, this is LOL. How could you ever say this person is a good songwriter?
Yeah.
And yet what's happening with a lot of these Taylor lyrics, and one on this title track in particular, is she's being cringy. And I think taking them out of context, as with a film or a rap or you know, a comedy special. You know, if you isolate any one moment, it's not going to add up.
A podcast?
Yeah, a podcast. Like, I think it totally is taking out the possibility that she's trying to be funny or embarrassing. Like, is she always funny when she means to be funny? Definitely not. Like, Taylor,
and is she sometimes funny when she's not meaning to be funny?
Of course.
A lot.
Of course. And same goes for Maddie Healy. But I think to screenshot a lyric like this one and say, like, this is proof that Taylor Swift is old, it will forever be and has always been a trash songwriter when she's doing something quite specific.
Yeah, and also, like,
with a lot of layers to
also
it.
Also, a couple things. One, this is a good lyric.
We should, not a let's bad. Just play it. Let's yeah, just play let's it, play and it. Then we'll talk about it.
You smoked them 8-7 bars of chocolate. We declare Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist. I scratch your head, you fall asleep. Golden retriever.
So number one, it's a good lyric, not a bad lyric. Number two, it is in the same way of like invoking John Mayer while doing Dear John.
Yes.
She's invoking Maddie Healy while doing like while slaying Maddie Healy.
Yes.
So and also on a pure like forget the melody or the rhythm of the flow. It is an interesting intersection of the interests of a Taylor Swift and a Maddie Healy, assuming that's who this is about.
I mean,
yes, sure.
Yeah.
But like, it's an interesting overlap of their interests. I believe it is an honest conversation that the two of them had.
While one of them was stoned.
Yes, potentially.
She makes it clear that only one of them smoked.
Well, at least that's how.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
a reliable narrator. I don't know.
You know, we've had some email exchanges with fans, podcast fans, about whether Taylor is in the Lavender A's. We'll never know. but it's extremely, the thing I like about this lyric is it's a 1975 lyric done with Taylor Swiftian specificity, sung by Taylor Swift in the mode of Maddie Healy. You know, it's like, it's good. This is good.
So what about specifically the image of a tattooed golden retriever? Because I think a lot of people are over-literalizing that part of the line, where to me, I've been known to describe someone as a golden retriever. Like, you know what it means.
You know the type.
A good boy.
If you're on TikTok, you certainly know the type.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a TikTok trend.
But it's sort of like, and then a tattooed version of a boy who would be described as a golden retriever.
Of course.
Not,
I think that's fine.
I think it's fine.
Are people mad at that?
Yeah, I think people are mad at it.
I think
people want to be mad.
I do. And we talked about this a little bit on the phone yesterday. Like, I think we're at a terrible point in discourse when people are no longer living with fixed ideological principles. They are simply living either pro something or con something. They are either opposed to Taylor Swift's lyrics or they are in favor of Taylor Swift's lyrics. They are not making independent assessments. Maybe they're good, maybe they're bad. Maybe some are better than others. Maybe it peaks and then it valleys. I think there are people, a lot of people on Twitter who the minute the lyrics came out were like, I cannot wait to
find the bad lyrics.
Yes, and screen grab it and be like, and point, like with a point emoji and be like, see? I don't have a lot to say for that kind of thinking. I also don't have a lot to say for the opposite kind of thinking, which is like, look how amazing this is.
Right.
I think you have to take it holistically. If you're looking for something bad and embarrassing, you'll find it, especially if you are inclined to think that everything is bad and embarrassing. This person does.
And especially if you put out 31 songs with a ton of lyrics in every song.
Yes.
One that I won't necessarily defend is... You Know How to Ball, I Know Aristotle.
Yeah.
Brand new, Full Throttle, Touch Me While Your Bros Play Grand Theft Auto. But I will defend the tweet that says, do this in MF Doom voice.
which if no one has.
Where all of a sudden it makes perfect sense. and yes, AI was made for this moment. So hit the email.
There are different kinds of bad lyrics, different kinds of bad Taylor Swift lyrics. To me, there are sets of quote unquote bad Taylor Swift lyrics that are actually just like so like cut to the quick, like emotional purging that maybe they're not as refined as other ones. And I think that there's a bunch of those lyrics on this album about Maddie Healy. And it's like, again, we are not a gossip show, but like my main takeaway from this album is, wow, what a ride that was.
Right. And I think that's the mission. That's what she's trying to say.
And frankly, still is. Not that they're together, but like,
we're still on the ride.
We are still on the ride. We are still in the after. And
Travis Kelce is on the ride.
Whether he knows it or not, he's on the ride. The intensity, the fervor, like, it's got her singing. It's got her cursing a lot, mm-hmm. which, like, you know, we always joke about Taylor cursing in the 2010s or whatever.
Now we're there.
Fully. Like, yeah. These are like, talk about Migos, right? Just like, yeah. It's like, yeah. Slut me out too.
Yeah.
Yeah, slut me out to Taylor's version.
Guilty as sin, like, yeah, that's there's a lot going on there.
And so it's got her cursing a lot. Yep. It's got her putting songs in the world that I would describe as not fully baked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a testament to me of the urgency, yes, of the feeling that's capturing these songs. And the songs here that I like the best are the ones that are a touch detached, a touch unhinged, a touch untethered from polite Taylor.
Which feels quite intentional.
And I think, you know, it's interesting because it's like, was it a tweet or you were saying that it's interesting that she chose to over-index right now because the Reputation re-release is coming?
Oh,
it's
the like, joke. Yeah, the yeah, joke is it's funny that Reputation Taylor's version will presumably come next,
like next week,
right after everyone turns on her again.
Right.
Yeah.
To me, that's like, that's not the bad stuff is not that stuff. The stuff that's bad but is actually good is like her basically being like, I cannot believe you guys wouldn't let me date this guy who I thought was really cool and like would have changed me. And now I'm just with the quarterback, tight end, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's the resentful,
so high school,
but the resentfulness that runs through this album, that's the thing that I really took away, is whether it's resentfulness in the actual lyrics, the words, resentfulness in the how much of it is about this one particular subject and one particular relationship, and also resentfulness that it's like, I'm just upset. And I'm not even going to do like a perfectly sealed off 1989 era song about it or Fearless into Red era song about it. Like, you think about the Kiss Off songs on Red, like, they're perfect. They were like worked over and worked over. Max Martin like worked over there. They're polished, mm-hmm, perfection. These are just like,
yeah,
put it out there.
Yeah.
Put it out there.
Yeah.
I got to get off my chest. That to me, that Taylor, I'm into that Taylor. I don't love a lot of the other songs that are around it, but that attitude is maybe the biggest awakening on this album.
And the stretch that I think really exemplifies what you're talking about is the back-to-back of I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. 'Cause I can do it with a broken heart. I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday every day.
I'm so obsessed with him, but he avoids me like a play. The dance song about being so depressed that you're crying all the time, which might be the most original sonic idea on this album. The literally, it's leftover Midnight stuff. It's like, I just don't like. I
it
know
hits harder than Karma in terms of the instrumental.
I don't even know if that's right.
Fine, but Into the Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, which is the messier version of All Too Well. It is a song that I don't think is done in that typical Taylor way.
Yeah.
But when she gets to the bridge outro, in which she's just roasting the bad boy who, yeah, said, I promise you, like, no, I'm down for this ride.
Yeah.
And then ghosted only to slide into other women's inboxes. Like, that stretch to me exemplifies everything that both works and doesn't about this style of songwriting at this moment of Taylor Swift. Do you like Smallest Man in the World? Like, do you think it works as her breakup song for this boyfriend, like the one?
This song has bars,
right?
But it's not the intensity of the singing is not where I would like it to be, as with most of this album. Oftentimes on this record, I'm like, that line's good. I wish it would be sung a little bit differently. Or that singing is interesting. I wish it was paired with lines that really hit. Or one of those two, but then the production doesn't quite deliver. Because you're just like, one of the things that happens when you return to the same production well over and over and over again is the listener begins to remember the mood of the prior thing that used that production, which then forecloses the opportunity for you to do a new thing with that same production choice. Because you're kind of living within the confines of what you've done with that production choice previously. There's a lot of that on this record. This album really has a lot of boundaries that it's working within, which is why these kind of brief moments of just like, this guy, can you believe what this guy made me do, wanted to make me do, made me want to do? The hell with you, the hell with my billion-dollar empire. Like, I want to tear it all down for whatever this is. And then at the end, on the alchemy, just being like, we won. Like, literally, the alchemy
y'all
is like,
won, as Offset once said.
Or I was just going to say, all I do is win. Like, literally, it's that.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is I don't even hate this song, The Alchemy. I don't even think it's terrible, but it is like a regressive mode after these brief glimpses of something much more transgressive hiding inside this album.
One name we haven't said on this podcast is Joe Alwyn.
Who's that?
The rug pull of I ended a very long semi-public relationship
and I made an album about it
no JK, it's about my rebound and my rebound
yeah
like,
but she's been sort of like dogging him out in bits and pieces in the last like three albums,
right? And with some vault tracks here and there,
and also like I'm not speaking from anything other than like casual observing, but it's like she dated this person for a long time during an extremely busy period of her life.
Sure. And not busy. COVID happened.
That's true. Yes. They wrote some songs.
She was making an album.
Yeah. But you know, they wrote some songs together during COVID, but you get the sense, at least, you know, the drilling safe lyric and so on and so forth. Like, you get the sense that she's a little bit like, why was I knocking on this door first? Like, what exactly happened? Like, what's the line? Like, you took so many years from me, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, it's like she's had a bit of an awakening.
Sure.
And I don't even know if that awakening is explicitly tied to like, hey, look what happened after, as much as I spent how many years and how many songs and how many albums singing positively and a little bit negatively about this guy. And he didn't even deserve any of that. Relationship was like kind of a wash. Which was like always a bit of the rub about Alwyn, like in the big picture of the Taylor lore. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, but it's like,
and that's the character she's painted of him here.
Yes,
certainly.
And it's like, we are not here to talk about, you know, we're not gossips.
But we are. Because she makes us them.
Yes.
You know?
But I think if this was a full album about having dated like a dull guy.
A sad semi-working actor.
Occasionally working actor. If this was a full album about that, and then I just don't think that that's set. First of all, it doesn't sell.
Well, we see where the inspiration came from on this album.
Yes.
You hear where the inspiration is, and it is what you're talking about. It's in the mess. You want to talk about the anthology?
Really?
But go for it. No, I mean, I'll say
It's lesser.
It's a lot of ballads. I don't know that we needed this.
They feel like demos. Like, my feeling is, you know, all the re-records, the vault tracks, like, it's this urge to anthologize and historicize yourself in real time.
Which I feel about this album in general.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, like at the end of every year, for example, we, the critics, like will review a bunch of box sets, you know, and it'll be like the 40th anniversary of some Ray Charles sure. album or some Beatles album. And it's like, oh, here's the alternate takes. And here are the sessions from songs that were recorded in the same like 6 month period, but got left off the record. And like all the Beatlesologists are like, oh, you can hear the thing that da 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 da. And I think Taylor has that in her brain a little bit, especially from having vault tracked the first five or six albums, right? These feel like vault track slash demos. These are like the Apple exclusive, iTunes exclusive.
But they're happening songwriting. In real time.
Yeah,
in but it's part just like, to juice statistics.
Of
right?
course, to juice like, statistics. But also, I think, to juice the to juice the lore.
Yeah.
So it's mostly Antonoff on the main album. It's mostly Dessner. Definitely the best Dessner stuff is on the main album by far. These feel like sketches, and I don't know why they exist. I mean, obviously the number juicing, but other than that, most artists would be a little wary of showing you a part of their catalog that is less complete, less interesting, less elegant than prior parts of your, than other parts of your catalog, especially 20 minutes after you just showed the first part. But Taylor does not see it that way.
Especially not in this time of more, of imperialness.
And it is also an important reminder. We're just two humble newspaper employees. And I'm not saying this album's not for us, because every album is for everybody. An album is forever. Music is for whoever wants to consume it.
Especially if you're young.
Or older. But this is just absolute fan service, fan over-indexing. This is just, I don't care what this person or this critic or this radio station or whatever, I don't care what any of those people say. The people are thirsty and I am slaking their thirst.
Yep.
That is what this is. And it doesn't matter if, like, fundamentally you and I are just like, ah, this isn't as good.
Yeah. Well, don't play it then, basically. Yeah. You want my old stuff? Buy my old albums.
Big facts.
Couple moments I just want to touch on here, and then we'll go out. Black Dog. That's the song on the second disc.
Yes.
There's a really inspired little rock moment where the song just spikes a couple times.
Yep. Old habits die,
scream. She's talking about the starting line and how, if she doesn't know the starting line, she's too young for you, bro. Which I think is like
funny,
pretty good dig. But I want to talk more about the connection between "I'm Gonna Get You Back" and the last song on the main album, "Clara Bow," and the elephant in the room goes by the name of Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah,
like what does it mean to you to put out a song that has the exact same lyrical motif of the girl who you end your album with a record exec saying she's going to replace you because she's edgier than you? Like, what it like to then do an all lowercase song with the same poetic structure? Get him back. I'm going to get you back. What like that's. Like, that's the real beef. That's the real Drake and Kendrick.
Here's what I'm going to say. And this is a piece of advice that I try really hard to live by in my own life. It's a piece of advice that I share with people who are going through challenging things. Don't punch down. It's a bad look.
I will say, I think it's artfully done on Clara Bow.
Doesn't matter.
I will say it's not a punch at all, really, except when you get to the bonus track.
It's a punch.
You think it's a punch?
It feels like a punch. Sure, I mean, but it's like,
but it's
if
framed.
The bonus track didn't come till 2 months from sure. now, different story.
Right.
But they're right. I'm looking at them. They're right here.
Yeah.
Right next to each other.
I will say what I like about Clara Bow and the way it's like, even if it is a shot, it's like, it's a read in a way. It's like, they're going to tell you you're this. They're going to tell you you're that.
The crown is stained, but you're the real queen, flesh and blood amongst war machines.
And basically like, it's like, don't let the man.
You think she's calling Olivia in?
She's saying, don't let the man pit us against each other by saying you're going to replace me, because at the end of the day, we're all replaceable.
Yeah, but also, isn't Taylor saying, if I was the man, then I'd be the man, and also I'm the man? Isn't she also saying that?
I think we need to go out on You Look Like Taylor Swift in This Light, that verse from Clara Bow.
Let's go.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I use the New York Times Games app every single day.
I love playing Connections.
With Connections, I need to twist my brain to see the different categories.
I think I know this connection. Look, Bath is a city in England, Sandwich is a city in England, Reading is a city in England, and I'm going to guess Derby is a city in England.
I started Wordle 194 days ago, and I haven't missed a day.
The New York Times Games app has all the games right there.
I absolutely love Spelling Bee. I always have to get Genius.
I've seen you yell at it and say, that should be a word.
Totally should be a word.
Sudoku is kind of my version of lifting heavy weights at the gym.
At this point, I'm probably more consistent with doing the crossword than brushing my teeth.
When I can finish a hard puzzle without hints, I feel like the smartest person in the world.
When I have to look up a clue to help me, I'm learning something new.
It gives me joy every single day.
Start playing in the New York Times Games app.
You can download it at nytimes.com/gamesapp.
We're back. It's Popcast Deluxe, youtube.com/popcast.
John and Joe.
John.
Joe.
John. We're back. We were just talking about all things Taylor. I feel like we maybe only got to like one third of what we could have gotten to, but there'll be more regular podcast. We'll have a full Taylor episode and regular podcast coming soon. We're going to go right to songs of the week. A song is loosely the loose phrase this week.
Yeah.
As with our new format, which we've talked about last week, first, we're going to go over a big song that we're both going to talk about, and then we're both going to give a recommendation afterwards. Tell us about this week's big song, Big Intrusion.
Thursday night, going into Friday, everyone's waiting for the Taylor Swift album.
I just say also how cleansing it was to actually not listen to the Taylor album at midnight?
Oh, yeah. I woke up to this Friday morning.
Yeah.
I went to sleep.
I was awake, but I was also just like, what if I just don't? I looked at Twitter a little bit and I was like, I don't want to be a part of this. I slept. I woke up, listened to around 11 a.m. It was very healing. I recommend it for everybody.
Yeah. I don't think we should all be consuming albums the moment they come out on our laptops and then immediately issuing an edict about whether it's classic or trash.
Unless you're Tom B, in which case
Tom Bryan's Taylor Swift review.
You're allowed.
Solid. Yes. Off the dome. Drake tweeted. Taylor made freestyle.
You need to know the baby West Coast victory, man. Call him a bitch for me. Talk about him liking young girls. That's a gift for me. Heard it on the Button podcast. It's gotta be true. They told me to spare the Machiavelli.
For my next book. Called Drake Tweeted.
Drake put out a song on Twitter and Instagram, I guess. Mostly on Twitter.
I think it was on Twitter, yep. Real early 2010s energy.
Real old Drake thirsting after Kat Dennings and Aubrey Plaza energy.
Wow.
Drake continues his, how would you say, baiting? His needling? His trolling?
Needling, for sure.
Of Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah.
And you press play on this song, and the first voice you hear is none other than Tupac Shakur.
Rest in peace.
May he rest in peace.
Tupac Shakur chiding Kendrick for letting the West Coast down.
Yeah.
What you hear on this song, so this is their three verses. They are a Tupac verse, a Snoop verse, and a Drake verse, all performed by Drake, the first two with AI vocal filters.
Yep.
Some would say all three flows are Drake flows. I don't totally subscribe to that.
Though there are moments when you can
hear
Drake.
There are moments, but like I think he does a pretty good job of, except where he's like doing like a little bit of triplet stuff in the Tupac verse. Tupac always used blank space really well, like inhales and exhales, yep. And like kind of like and pausing. Drake does a pretty good job of that, and like the kind of like slow and steady creep of a Snoop verse. Mm-hmm. Like I think he kind of approaches it.
Yeah, I mean Drake is nothing if not a student, a fan, yes. And a mimic. He's absolutely good at all of those things.
Like it's funny, you're not beating the number one fan allegations by doing a diss track in the voice of Tupac Shakur and in the voice of Snoop Dogg. Like you're not beating the number one fan allegations, but that's fine. Like
because you're Drake, and
it's okay.
What makes you good.
Yes, and it's like I understand. Like in the other records, you're like I could never be anybody's number one fan. With love, it's okay. Being a fan is fine. It also makes you a better rapper. So there are these three verses. Also, the thing that I most like about this, we'll talk about the AI and the sort of politics of it, is he really, on his verse, he really is in his like 2013 flow. Like yeah. It's really old Drake. Mm-hmm. It's really like childish Drake in yeah. a way. It's not big mafia boss Drake.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Well, he's calling Taylor the big mafia
yes.
boss.
It's like testy Drake. It's like kind of like still like fighting for his stripes Drake. Mm-hmm. That's the energy of that last verse.
And the whole verse is daring Kendrick Lamar. It's like half a back-to-back, right? It's like
yes.
It doesn't have the impact of him dropping two consecutive Meek Mill disses in a row, mm-hmm. but he's basically like, remember when I did that? Like Kendrick, like, where are you? Mm-hmm. And why are you waiting for Taylor Swift to drop her album?
And like, also, like, literally him saying, like, I know you're in that apartment in New York working on the quintuple entendre.
doing lyrical gymnastics.
Yeah, that, like, I can't understand. I better not be yeah. able to understand it.
So, as a song, this is... It's
Billy Woods on the track.
It's thin as a song. As an idea, yeah. as a troll...
I think it's funny. Like,
did you laugh when you heard it?
I did laugh once
you realized what was going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and it's like we talked about this a little bit in the prior segment about Taylor, where it's like people are organized against Taylor lyrics or pro Taylor lyrics, not so much like is it good, but more like is it Taylor or
right.
do I hate Taylor? This is, I thought, another interesting litmus test, right? Like as you see, there's the this is washed, this is a rinsed idea, this is terrible.
Or this is blasphemous.
Right.
How dare he?
Right, you see that, but then you also see the, who's a genius more than Drake?
Right.
For coming up with this novel approach to battle rapping.
Yeah. I will say, there's layers. As with a lot of things that Drake does, the fact that so much of this Kendrick beef has turned on the question of, is it AI or not?
Yes.
You know, the initial... leak of Drake's diss track, the first version, everyone was like, is it AI? Is it AI?
And then he cleaned up his own version.
Cleans out yep. his own version, puts out the official version of Push Ups. The Kendrick Lamar leaked response, which was revealed in between our last episode
and now
to have been, I would say, one of the better uses of an AI vocal filter that I've ever heard.
That's how I sound before the AI.
Let them do it to themselves. Self-inflicted career wounds that fear helped. Drop nukes, surprise moves, hide and respect. They promised me my death. Now they deleted threats.
That's how it sound on the AI version.
Let them do it to themselves. Self-inflicted career wounds that fear helped. Drop nukes, surprise moves, hide and respect.
The guy, you know, you could hear some seams, but the guy, Psy the Rapper, I believe
yeah.
was his name.
Mm-hmm.
Plausibly mimicked Kendrick in the writing of the song and in the delivery. He makes the point of the way Kendrick like lands his T's.
The emphases.
And then came out to say, I faked this, but a lot of people, including members of Drake's team were saying, no, no, this is real. Like, drop it, drop it, drop it. Using, you know, as part of this taunting. And then the third one is the Kanye remix of Like That, which had been rumored for a week or two. And people who had the leak saying, I actually have no idea if this is AI or not.
Right. Down on the bottom, 500 up at the top. Titanium grills, caught a smile on the rocks. I done had everything that you're able to get. I invented drill too, I ain't gonna lie, it was chopped. Hey, another one, volume one. Then it's two and three, vultures on repeat. But was not.
Kanye put it out over the weekend. It was then deleted from his YouTube channel.
Is that true?
Yeah. The real giveaway that it's a real Kanye remix of the track where Kendrick first disses Drake is that he added some spooky chords to I would say, ruin the number one song in the country. Like, totally unnecessary. And then
he like Chief Keef Young Chop.
I was gonna say then he shouts out the other time when he famously ruined a song by remixing it. And he says he invented drill with Young Chop.
Yes. Well, then he takes it back, sort of. He like kind of
takes back, goes back. So the fact that Drake is basically like, okay, if this beef is gonna be about AI, I'm gonna do a practical joke with it.
Yes.
While also daring Kendrick to come at him.
Okay.
To me makes it land in a way that's like what this beef will, this will be remembered as the great AI beef of 2020.
What do you make of the Galaxy Brain take that Drake is sort of carrying water for Lucian, who's invested in a lot of AI technology and how AI might ultimately be used in music making? And this is essentially softening up the public for getting acclimated to popular musicians doing AI, like the Luke Combs cover of Tracy Chapman.
The last part's a joke. You're talking about, or is it? You're talking about Lucian Grange, chairman of Universal Music Group, home to most major label pop stars, including Drake and Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm.
And like most people involved in this beef.
There's a big, very good John Seabrook story in The New Yorker about Universal's investment in AI technology, if you want to go deep on that subject. But I think Drake does what he wants. Drake's deal with Republic is a licensing deal. Mm-hmm. Drake, I don't think, despite what Kanye might have you think.
No.
I don't believe him to be in the pocket of the label in that way.
I agree. I'm it's more like him having access to certain levels of technology or certain like...
Oh,
like,
you think this is like a beta use of the Tupac and Snoop vocal filter that then might be licensed out for popular use?
Yes.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, if anyone was going to grease the wheels for this technology, it would be Drake. But I think it's already happening. We're, you know, a year deep on this. We're a year since Heart on My Sleeve, the big weekend Drake track that sort of set off the AI vocal filters craze.
Didn't Ghost Rider put out a song last week or something?
Yeah, we played it in an episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's quiet because now everyone's doing it. It's no longer as surprising, which is why I think Drake, who, as we know, is very online, I think he could have gotten here with or without it. But I do think, whether it's on purpose or not, it helps to normalize the idea that we're going to have not only amateurs making songs in recognizable voices, but potentially famous people as well.
Does it hit? Is it an actual successful blow struck in the battle?
No, I think it's a successful joke. And I don't think Drake meant it as anything more than a taunt. And I think that as a meme, it works. As a song, you know, it's not playable on a streaming service. And I think that that's intentional.
Yeah. I mean, what I will say is it's memorable. Like, this is the thing. Like, when you think back, you said this is going to be the AI beef. It's memorable. Drake is extremely good at being memorable in these settings.
Yep.
Like, understanding, like, what is the novel tweak that I can bring to whatever the circumstances.
Like, playing the memes in the background of OVO Fest.
Which I saw in person. Right. And I was like...
Which was at the time.
It was unbelievable. I mean, literally, I was in Toronto there watching him put Meek Mill memes that were just on Twitter.
Yeah.
3 days prior, and being like, you took that meme. I mean,
this sounds like old hat now, but
I mean, at that time, it was absolutely unthinkable that that could happen. It was the Summer Jam screen. It was as potent as Jay putting the Prodigy photos on the Summer Jam screen. It was so shocking. And you're like, unbelievable. He's moving at the speed of the internet. Mm-hmm. And he's still moving at the speed of the internet. Yeah. So it's successful in that way. It also plays into, again, him being a fan.
Right.
Fandom is... people love to rap. How do you learn to rap? You learn to rap by emulating other rappers.
Yeah.
And then figuring out your innovation. This is like him exposing some piece of himself. I wonder if he told Snoop first.
Well, Snoop did the reaction shot right. Where he didn't really come down one way or
right. The
other.
But it's like, I probably not would be
yeah.
my guess.
Yeah.
Certainly didn't clear with the Tupac estate, I'm sure. But I don't know. I think it's effective because it takes the battle out of a kind of like lyrical battle. Mm-hmm. And again, him like sort of like
makes it strategic.
Exactly. And him kind of being dismissive of Kendrick's talent, being like, oh, they're gymnastics and the quintuple entendres. It's him basically saying like the thing that you are trying to do
is not how you win a beat. That's not 2024.
Yeah, it's useless. Yeah. Like you're literally like scratching things out on a notepad and like doing like rhymes like A, B, A, B, C, B.
Whereas
A,
I'm
B.
calling you Little Marco, basically. Yeah.
Yes, and I think it's such a elegant is not the right word, but what it does, it absolutely reframes the idea of what this battle is about and how it should be kind of like executed. And I frankly don't know if anybody on the other side has the, I don't know what PG Lang is capable of in terms of, you know, theatricality. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think this looks different in the middle than it does when the other shoe drops, if the other shoe drops. I think Drake is coming across as very confident.
Yes.
Like he's ready for the next round. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him in this place before. Didn't work out that way. You know, maybe he feels like there's not another child.
Right.
So he's good. Untouchable, but like, right. I think how and when Kendrick responds, like we'll see if this was hubris or not.
Yeah, but it's also, but on a fundamental level, it's changing the terms of the debate and saying, you thought you were going to win by out-rapping me.
Yeah.
That's actually off the table now. You have to out-conceptualize me. You have to out-creative direct me. You have to out-technologize me. And I don't know. I just simply don't know if that's the battle that Kendrick is showing up for.
I have some other rap if you want to listen to another rap song.
I'd love to hear.
Since we talked so much about Taylor in this episode, I thought, you know, my song of the week would just be some old fashioned rapping.
Great.
Mozzie.
Look at Mozzie.
Sacramento rapper.
Phenomenal.
One of the most consistent rappers of the last handful of years.
Who signed Mozzie?
Interscope?
Didn't he have, wasn't it like a...
Oh, he's on CMG.
CMG, yeah, right.
With Yo Gotti.
Yes.
This is his first album since he did, I believe, like a year in prison on a weapons charge, sort of in the middle of, you know, what had been a pretty productive and successful rise with bumps along the way. But he put out a new album on Friday called Children of the Slums. And with it came, as all new releases do, a From the Block performance of a song called Still Hurt on here. And it's just what Mozzie does. It's, dangling microphone, West Coast lyrics, both tough and vulnerable at the same time. Very nimble flow.
Really good rapper.
Really good rapper. Magnetic presence. Good performer. It's just a really solid album that I'm enjoying a lot.
Pedicure, I gotta keep you clean. Automobile 2023, give me 20 feet. I don't want you nerds around the thugs. Suckers know the purpose of these drums. Walk through committee, why you think he on the run? Got him a B&B, dropped him off, he in a tuck. Terrorize them all and buy anything she touch. She sold her booty for it, you can't tell me that it's tricking.
Okay, so on my year-end list last year, I put some wild cards in there. One of the folks I put in there was an electronic music producer named Odatari from Houston. I'm sure someone's come up with a genre name for this. I don't know what it is. Hard wave? Like, I don't know. It's
You're just coining that off.
Yeah, sure. Right, why right not? Now? Yeah. Hard wave. Run with that. Enjoy it. Hashtag it. Odatari's music sort of veers between abrasive and tuneful, but does a pretty good job of not sacrificing one too much for the other. But it is like really like it is harsh music that, let's say, two times out of three has like woven through delicacy. And Odatari had maybe like two or three songs last year that I really, really thought were great. And he has a new song that came out on Friday. It's called Break a Neck, and it's with Aisha Erotica. And Aisha Erotica has been popular in various social media platforms at various times in the last few years. Had kind of a unexpected TikTok moment last year. There's a song of hers called Yummy, which got remixed and became the soundtrack for the Tube Girl videos. I don't know if you saw those.
Not to be confused with Justin Bieber's Yummy.
No, very different. I am unfortunately not wearing my Juicy Couture sweatsuit today. But let's play a bit of the Tube Girl video. And if you're on TikTok, you'll know this song. So Aisha Erotica kind of had this moment, but I'm always like, I need more. Like, I need more. I want more. I want there to be like an organized movement. This song with Odatari, I'm like, oh, is this the first step? Not simply of like a beautiful Odatari song, but also maybe like the slow mainstreaming of Aisha Erotica. Like, could happen. So let's listen to Break a Neck. I can make you break your neck. I can make you break your neck. You break a sweat, break a sweat, break a sweat. I can make you break your neck. I can make you break your neck. I can make you break a sweat, break a sweat. Damn. Ooh, you're moving too fast, girl. You need to slow down. Namaste. We are at the end, final segment. It's youtube.com/popcast, Popcast Deluxe. John's here. Joe's here. Always go out with a snack, as you know. We had Girl in Red on the show a couple months ago. The Girl in Red album came out recently. It's called I'm Doing It Again, Baby. I had ordered this to be the snack for the Girl in Red episode, but ultimately, I think we decided it was like maybe too on the nose. So we went in a different direction, but it has been sitting in the pantry. Frankly, it's been sitting in the pantry because I'm pretty confident I'm going to hate it. nothing to do with Girl in Red.
Yeah, there's a lot of words on this package that I can't pronounce, but we're going to try our best.
I'm going to run another joke that I did before we started taping, which is like, what is that, a fish or a shark? And why is it that color? Like, how bad are the oceans that is turned that being that probably was like a light gray?
Sure.
And now it's a dark
now
gray.
It's a dark
gray. Now it's a dark gray because of what you guys put in the ocean.
So these are called
Kutches.
Kutches. That's how I would say it too. They are a vegan snack. They are, how would you say this?
I wouldn't. I very simply would not.
Salzige? Herringe? This word looks like herring.
So like salty fish.
Salty fish. That's where I was going with it. Salty herring.
One salty fish.
Sweet vegan snack.
I'm extremely scared of this. I walked past the Swedish candy store on Allen or Essex.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fancy
bon
Swedish
bon
store.
Or whatever. Yeah. Literally 50 people online.
TikTok's a hell of a drug.
You people are unwell. People are genuinely unwell. There's so much good candy. Anyway, this is going to be bad.
You like black licorice in general?
No.
What do you do with a black jelly bean? Yeah.
I don't take it. I take it to the head?
Yeah, I love it.
Absolutely.
Nice. I like American black licorice. I find European black licorice, like the real thing,
too intense
to be, yeah, I'm just like, I'm not made for
it. Here's the thing. That's not candy.
Well,
that's
salty fish flavored.
No, but I'm saying like, I don't know if this got in my head when I was young, but like I associate it with like punishment of some kind.
Yeah.
It feels like punishment. And like, you know how like Lil Jon was like, oh, Thin Mints, those are for grandmas. This is grandma candy.
All right, let's try
this.
This is grandma candy. What if it turns you around? You did like the Mayo Lays from
anything
Argentina.
Anything is possible. I don't want to, much like as a music critic, I never want to say up front that I couldn't possibly like something because I might like it.
The smell is not going to help.
Oh, jeez.
All right. I'm going now. I'm just going to eat a...
Oh, man.
Hmm. Whoa. They're cute.
Man.
Imagine eating a whole bag of this.
No.
How much would I have to pay you to eat the whole bag?
I'd eat the whole bag for $1,000.
$1,000?
Yes.
This is a pair of shoes you have your eye on?
Yeah. There is, actually. For $1,000, I'd eat a whole bag. You ponying up?
No.
You GoFundMe-ing?
Yeah. We're going to raise money. We're going to make John eat a whole bag of black licorice fish.
I mean,
not as good as a black jelly bean. Not as bad as the harshest black licorice that I've ever had. It is like it's candied on the outside. It tastes like pavement, not just because it looks like pavement.
It tastes like an oil slick.
Yeah, it's like how I imagine,
like the tar in between pavement. Like,
I mean, it does resemble that, but I think it's also what it tastes like. Well, okay. There's something a little bit artful about it, though.
It's a better version of whatever this is than I've had in the past.
Yeah.
But what is the, do we know the origin story of why anyone finds this to be an enjoyable flavor experience?
I think if you're raised among the fjords, your palate is different.
Also, the whatever's coming out of the gelatin, it's like it's coated my tongue.
Yeah.
And like the back of my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, like, I'm going to have to, we should have toothbrushes, frankly, on set. Like, this is,
it's intense. It has the numbing effect of, like, an anise, you know,
anise flavor.
I would like a mouthwash with this, because I would feel like the medicinal aspect of it.
I would be like,
oh, it's working, you know, even if it's only placebo. I'm going to give this a 3.5 out of 10. I don't hate it. But it's not candy.
It's a 1.5. And the half is because I understand it to be probably the best available version of whatever this is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go 1.5. But I literally want to throw these off the roof of the building.
I feel like people who like eat grapefruit, who like wake up first thing in the morning and want to eat a grapefruit, like might get some enjoyment out of this.
Couldn't be me. That's our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast, and every podcast deluxe is at youtube.com/podcast, where we're rolling out new content all week, including a lot of snack reviews. So subscribe, like. I'm John. That's Joe. We'll be back next week.